This is episode 189, recorded December 9th, 2013.
Greetings, Aquariumaxers.
Hi.
Okay, we've changed the input levels because we got some good feedback that last episode wasn't loud enough. So we're hoping that this episode is going to be louder. Just different dynamics here in this acoustic environment makes it, you know, we need to adjust the field recorder properly. So hopefully this is much better than last week.
So let us know either way if it's better or the same or worse.
Yeah, or too loud and distorted. But mm-hmm. We always try to adjust it, but, you know, you can't always tell what you're going to end up hearing. So.
Yep. Well.
Before we start.
Oh.
Tony.
Yes?
Said thought it would be cool if we had sort of a quiz show today. Tony in New York.
A quiz show?
Well, not a quiz show, but a quiz during the show.
Okay.
Because he said last episode.
I haven't studied.
That's okay. Last week we had tantalizingly mentioned the big four live bearers, but we didn't actually say which ones they were. So he said, The beginning of the show we could say, which ones are they? The big four live bearers. And at the end of the show we can say it. And just, you know, then
and people can see if they got it right.
So you can see if they got it right. So there you go. Okay. We're going to present that challenge to you.
So think of what they are right now.
Yeah. Doo, no Googling.
Doo, 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 okay. Doo, doo.
Okay. Put down that smartphone. Okay.
Okay. So we have Sean in North Carolina today, and Dr. Bob in Boston, and Tony in New York, Mick in Carnforth, and Ryan in Arizona.
And yeah, we do. There we go. Good.
Yes. Okay. Yes, indeed. So We're going to start with Sean in North Carolina. He sent us a quick message. He said the internal mic sounds much better, and he thought having people call in with the Google Plus Hangouts thing would work great.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. So we will try to do that. We're going to try to work that out.
Dr. Bob.
On the North Shore of Boston.
Yes, not the South Shore.
Says.
Not the East Shore.
No.
Not the West Shore.
No.
Not the Southeast
Shore. Okay, that's enough shores.
Okay. He says, I may have a bigger problem than I imagined. My granddaughter's bed had died literally overnight from what I believe is mycobacteria. The fish was fine in the early evening before the timer shut down the lights. In the morning, as I did my rounds, I did not see Dory come racing out to greet me. Rather, I found him dead in the back of the tank behind the plants. The widespread gray patches on fins and body are my main diagnostic.
He also mentioned in a later email, because we corresponded a bit on this, that he had the fish was suffering from exophthalmia. It had its eyes, you know, protruding, and a lot of inflamed gills.
Before it died?
No, this was suddenly.
When he found it?
Yeah.
Okay. Apparently, this bacterial infection strikes quickly, is fatal in as little as 12 hours, is untreatable and highly contagious even to humans. The tank has been torn down and sterilized. Research showed that chlorine is ineffective at killing mycobacteria. The most effective disinfectant is a solution of 2%
glutaraldehyde.
Glutaraldehyde.
Yeah.
What he said.
Mm-hmm.
An alcohol compound available on Amazon for $10 a quart and used by some aquarists to carbon dose planted aquaria. I also sterilized all my tools and equipment. I hope the mycobacterium was not transferred to any of the other tanks. Interestingly, some fish websites say that labyrinth air breathers are most susceptible. This may be due to the presence of the bacterium on the water surface. Additionally, some beta websites claim that blue beta seem to be especially susceptible. Okay, remind us what labyrinth air breather means.
Okay. Betas and related fish.
I mean me.
Okay. Well, betas and related fish, and abantoids, that whole group, they have a structure in their head that is full of surface area. And the surface area is used to basically transfer oxygen. They gulp the, you know, the bubbles of air in and then transfer that bubble to these labyrinth-like structures in their head that are highly vascularized.
Mm-hmm.
And they pull the oxygen from those bubbles and then they spit it out and do it again. And so fish that are able to do that based on this organ in their head, which, because it is shaped like a maze, is called a labyrinth organ.
Okay. Alrighty. It was very interesting that you talked about genetic diversity in mycobacteria in response to Tom's query this past week. I wonder if the additional susceptibility is a genetic flaw from over-hybridization or line breeding the blue types. Apparently, the color blue requires two different chromatophores or pigments to be present. Overlapping light reflecting motile iridophores. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to do a Sean Spencer. I've heard it both ways. Underlined by a layer of light-absorbing melanophores.
Yeah.
Did I get that one right?
Yep, you did.
Okay.
That's true.
I got an all-red half-moon to put into the beta tank. We will see what happens. However, I'm beginning to struggle a bit in my thinking as to the ethical issues involved in supporting over-hybridization. I'm beginning to lean toward the side that says to stop buying fish like betas and guppies in favor of more natural species of fish. You're going to have to tell me how to say that one again.
Goodyids.
Or pupfish, a killifish species, are a good example. Many species of killifish rival any betta or guppy for color and finnage. Or, if you really want a colorful live bear, try Endler's guppies instead. They are endangered in the wild as their habitat in Venezuela is threatened.
And that's a good point to bring up. I mean, there are a lot of fish that are beautiful already. And I find myself partial to some of the, you know,
more
highly
wild types.
Selected forms of bettas, for example, and goldfish, but then I also love the wild types of minifish too.
You so. Really like the placots?
I do. I love them, and they're very much like the native ones, mm-hmm. The natural ones, in many ways. So it's, but I also like a nice half moon too.
That's true.
So, you know, it's hard to say, but there are certain, at least some things to be considered there.
He goes on to say, I listen to a gardening podcast that is broadcast on a PBS station. They have a phone-in type show, but instead of broadcasting live, they schedule callers that have submitted questions via email to call at specific times and record the Q&A. They also do interviews with experts in the field, and they broadcast the show during their slotted time. This works well in that they don't have the problems associated with live radio. I can think of one specific live blog talk radio show where I have thought they would have done well to record and edit before broadcasting, as there were live comments made that made me left me shaking my head in wonderment. Sometimes I'm sure, much like my cold reading of all of your emails does.
Oh, that's a good point. We may want to look at that for the format too.
Just a side note, we have actually, it's on purpose that I haven't read your emails beforehand, because we found that if I read them beforehand, then I start asking Russ questions about them. He's like, no, wait, you should save this for the podcast. But then I don't remember them when it's time to do the podcast because I've already read the email. And so It is actually on purpose that I'm reading them cold. It just sometimes gets a little tongue twisted.
That's okay. I think it works out in the end.
He says, I think that idea would work well for you too, as you are not broadcasting live, but it would require a bit more time commitment for you in scheduling question and answer sessions with those who submit questions, recording and editing. I don't know your current time commitment to this project, but I can imagine it would increase.
It might a bit. It makes sense that it would. And we would probably wouldn't do it every week. We would just pick times to do it, you know, once in a while do it. So I think it's a good idea, though. I like it.
Mm-hmm. He also says that he thought the volume level was pretty low last week. So hopefully that's better this week.
Yeah. I did want to make a note on the mycobacteria too. As far as I can tell, when you have a problem with mycobacterium, it's generally something that has been going on for a while, but it doesn't look symptomatic. You don't see the symptoms in the fish, and then suddenly you do.
And then it's too late.
Yeah, I kind of think, and this is just me talking here as far as I know, but that it's sort of an exponential growth thing. When you start out, you know, at the bottom of that curve, there's very little growth going on because the numbers are so low. But you hit a point where you go from a very small number to a very large number pretty quickly as that curve, you know, starts hitting that point towards approaching infinity. And, you know, so you go from a very low population of bacteria, very low concentration of bacteria in the fish, and then suddenly it just kind of
takes off,
and then that's when you start noticing symptoms. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it works, but that's how it seems to have worked in the fish that I've seen. One day the fish looks fine, the other day kind of
it's gone.
You know, it's puffing up and getting really sick, and then it's dead in a couple of days. So yeah, I think that's I hope that everything's okay. And it seems to me that he was talking about the glutaraldehyde. I think that's, I can't remember if Flourish Excel is glutaracetyl or whatever it is. I think it's related a little bit chemically, but anyway. Hopefully he does not have any issues with his new beta.
Yeah, our betas. Okay, we're going to go to Tony in New York. He said, I'd love to get in on your upcoming call-in conference show. Shoot me an email anytime as it starts to come together. Should be a lot of fun to try it out and hang with you and the Aquarimax friends in your virtual living room.
I kind of like that idea. We could have an Aquarimax virtual living room episode.
Yeah.
Every once in a while. And that's what we could fun. Call it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Virtual tank.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. In your last episode, you... Oh, this is what you were just talking about at the beginning.
Right. Okay, so we've already talked about that. The listener's quiz.
Okay. But we're not going to say his answers yet.
Right, because that would defeat the purpose. We'll say his answers at the end.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay, so Mick in Carnforth.
UK.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I be more redundant?
No, try.
He too also said as well. How about that?
That works.
Okay. The volume was a little low on the last week. Hopefully, again, it's better. He sent us a link to information on the polyfilter,
which we'll put on the show page.
Mm-hmm. And he says, I now use it in my water conditioning tub to take any excess organics or pollutants from the rainwater. I still use it even if I top it up from the mains.
That sounds like I got to get myself some of that.
Mm-hmm. He said, had a first spawn of Pelvicachromis.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's three. There's another one. I thought I was through that one.
It's okay.
Okay. Pelvicachromis teaniatus.
That works. That's pretty close.
How do you say it?
Just Nigerian red.
Red fry.
They're related to cribbenses, you know. Okay. Closely related to those.
He says, been feeding on golden pearl, superfine fry powder, and cyclops. Also got some Limia melanogaster in the shop. I've been wanting to get some of these great little live bears again for the last few years, so a small group of them will be heading into my own fish room very soon, closely followed by some golden halfbeaks, which came in last week, but after them for some time, too.
Cool. Nice acquisitions.
He says, the camera charger has gone missing, so I will send on some videos and pictures as soon as the new one arrives in the post.
Cool.
If you did do a call-in and the time difference allowed, I would definitely take part. I think it would be a great show.
Yeah, we could work that out. What?
His PS. Mick, still in Carnforth, not Texas.
That's because you said something about Carnforth, Texas.
Yeah, because there isn't a Carnforth, Texas.
That's probably good. That's
at least, as far as I know.
And it's easier not to get confused because we have one in UK, so there's that's a good place for it.
Glasgow and I think North Carolina.
Right, there's all kinds of different things. Yeah. There's in Utah alone, there are at least three cities named after cities in Italy.
Which nobody but us pronounces right.
Oh, what's he got there with the PS?
Oh, he says, good news on Late Night Leo starting up again.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's a leopard gecko podcast?
Not just leopard geckos, but it's kind of focused on that. But it talks about other reptiles, too. Oh, actually, okay. I listened to it this morning because of Mick. Because Mick pointed it out. And I listened to it this morning as I was exercising.
Kind of cross-listed.
That was cool. Yeah. And we've got one from Ryan in Arizona.
It's not in here, but I think he just said about the volume too.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, right. He said that they're checking the volume. Mm-hmm. So, we needed to make sure that
was low
okay.
And all.
Yeah, but I don't think it's as low now. I think we kind of took care of the issue. I hope so. Okay, everybody. Now, we're going to move on to the next segment of the show, but before we do...
Pencils down.
We're going to ask you the answers to the quiz and see if you're right. So here you go. We'll give you a chance to answer right now. Number one. Number two. What was that funny noise?
Oh, like a fairy flying through the room? No, it was the iPad getting in on the
action
number
guy.
One. Yeah, it was giving you a sound effect.
Okay. Number two. Number three. Number four. Okay. The big four.
I think they got to say it louder because I couldn't hear
it. You couldn't hear it? Okay, yeah. The first one. Well, you know, it doesn't really matter the order. Honestly, but guppies, mollies, swordtails, and platies or plaities, depending on how you pronounce it. Those are the four. And, of course, we must acknowledge that platies and swordtails have been so genetically mixed that it's not even funny.
So they're almost the same thing anymore?
You can't find any
plored tails?
Of the, you know, the cultivated varieties of sword tails or platies that don't have some blood of the other fish in them, almost.
Oh, they'd be slatties? Slaties?
we got to be careful. We'll come up with something really awful. But if you get wild varieties, you know, you can get pure ones. And there's more than one species of swordtail. There's more than one species of platy, for example. But just to say, if you get the highly cultivated varieties, they're likely to have blood of one or the other. And there are actually two species of platies. There's the Variatus platy and the, you know, they're, so those are mixed up in there too. Anyway, so Tony was intrigued by it. He was right. And he said the last one that he figured out was platies. So now, I think Dr. Bob had a really good suggestion last time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was to revisit some topics that we talked about before. And we're going to do one right now. Okay? And this topic is a live food spotlight. We're going to spotlight Drosophila melanogaster, otherwise known as the fruit fly, as a live food.
Yes.
See, Kelly's going to pretend, and she's going to have to pretend pretty hard, that she wants to culture fruit flies for her fish.
I'm pretending really hard.
But actually, why don't you just ask me, you know, start out at when asking me when I might even want to use them or why.
Okay, why do I want to culture fruit fly?
Okay, first of all, they're really easy. They're one of the easiest live foods. And nobody cultures winged fruit flies, or flighted fruit flies, I should say. They do culture ones with wings, but...
Yes, because culturing flighted fruit flies would be stupid.
Yeah, it's not a very good idea. But... They're easy to take care of. They produce a lot of live food. Fish tend to love them. For example, I have kept a lot of kinds of fish that like them. Cardinal tetras usually like to spend the time near the middle to the bottom part of the tank, you know. They spend most of their time there. But they would swim straight up to the top and grab fruit flies off the surface, greedily, gobbling them down. And they would wait for flakes and pellets to sink down to them. But when they saw the fruit flies up the top, they'd go to the top.
It's like fishy candy.
I fed them to...
I'm so glad our candy's not fruit flies.
Me too. Dwarf African frogs. They usually eat off the bottom also, or at least low in the water column. I've had them, they will come up to the surface and grab the fruit flies off the surface. Lots of fish really, really go after fruit flies, and it... after I was feeding them fruit flies for a little while, my frogs actually spawned, which is the first and only time I've ever had African dwarf frogs spawn for me. So they tend to be good that way in terms of conditioning fish, not only amphibians, but fish. And fish of various sizes will go after them. Even guppies that are subadult guppies can handle the melanogaster fruit flies. But even goldfish that are fairly big will be interested in them. So they appeal to a wide variety of fish. They do float at the top. You can't get them to sink down. I've tried it. I even froze some to see if they would sink after they
did
were
they
frozen.
Still, did they still float when they were frozen?
Like corks.
Yee.
So, yeah. They won't work for like quarries that won't feed off the surface, that feed off the bottom. But they, if you can get them, if the fish will go to them, they're great food. So that's maybe why.
Okay.
Should we go into the how?
Yes, tell me how.
Okay, how? Well, you need a container. It needs to be escape-proof.
That's important.
I really like the ventilated deli cups. I just buy them online.
Just plain? They come empty.
They come empty. But
you don't buy, like, chicken salad in the deli cups. No. I'm sorry, I'm being a little goofy.
But if you get the ventilated lids that are sold for insect culture, specifically, they have, like, I don't know how many holes they have in the top, but several holes in the top.
You don't have to go through and punch your own holes and try to get them the right size.
They're covered with a mesh of some type. It's like a fabric of some kind. I don't know what it is exactly, but it keeps the flies from getting out. If you
want, you have a link to where you get them on Amazon?
I don't get them on Amazon.
Oh, I
get them
online. I guess you just said online.
Yeah.
Do you have a link to where you get them online?
There are lots of good places to get them. I can put a link up, but I like Josh's Frogs is a good one. I've bought them from them before.
Okay.
They're dark frog breeders. There's a local place. I ordered these last ones from the local place. I can't remember what the name is. It's about an hour away from here, and so they ship. It's like overnight shipping for the price of first
really
class
cheap.
For me.
Yeah.
That doesn't help a lot of other people, but it's like it starts with a T, what the company is. I'll have to look it up. Right. A
couple of links.
But there's so many that you can order them from. You just get the deli cups with the lids. But if you want to do it yourself, you can use just a glass jar, a plastic bottle, whatever. I've found that paper towel with a rubber band over it works well, as long as it doesn't get wet. If it gets wet, that's really sad. Then it causes problems. You can also use like filter floss if it's a small bottle with a small lid. Something I've also used, you get a jar that with a threaded plastic lid, mm-hmm. cut a hole in it, like a square hole in it with a craft knife, and then just use a piece of fine mesh fabric, put it over the jar, and then screw the lid down on top of the fine mesh fabric. That works fine too. Something that the flies can't escape from and the other bugs can't come in, but air comes in. Through. Right. Then you need medium. And it's really nice just to get some commercial medium. You buy a couple of pounds of it online and it lasts like 2 years.
It's not really worth it, time and expense-wise, to make your own.
Well, you can make your own. And if you do, I would recommend... I'll put my recipe up just for fun. Mm-hmm. But you can... Basically, the recipe that I use... It's on my iPad somewhere. I'd have to find it to get it up. Maybe I should just pull it up. What do you think?
Sure.
But I'm going to explain something.
I think you should put it up on
the website. It's based on potato flakes.
Like mashed potato flakes. That you turn into instant mashed potatoes?
They turn into instant mashed potatoes, yeah. You get some potato flakes. Here's my recipe. It's right here. And this is not just my recipe, but I based it on other people's recipes, too, and threw in my own ideas.
I'm going to tweak it.
Mixed it up. So, okay. But I can't claim, that I came up with this myself entirely. But I didn't... This exact recipe, I didn't copy from anybody either. You know what I mean?
This is what you came up with.
It's my version of other things. Mm-hmm. So half a cup of potato flakes, two teaspoons of nutritional yeast. That's not the same as baker's yeast.
No.
It's been deactivated.
Get that at, a...
Health food store. Yeah, it's a good place to get it. You can usually get it in bulk. Cheap.
Mm-hmm. It tastes good on popcorn and toast.
Yeah, and it's good in some things too, but you put that in. That's really key. It has a lot of nutrients that they need to boost the protein.
It's full of B vitamins.
It is. And I put in half a teaspoon of spirulina powder for lots of nutrients, including...
You can also get it at a health food store.
Right, also at a health food store. And natural colorants for color enhancement of your fish you're feeding. A third a teaspoon of cinnamon, which is good at helping to inhibit mold. It's a natural fungicide. And a fourth of a cup of boiling water and a fourth of a cup of white vinegar. So you put the dry ingredients together and then you add the boiling water and then stir it around, add the vinegar. And you can add up to an eighth of a cup of water and or vinegar to get it so it's moist enough.
Above what you just listed.
Above what I just listed to make it kind of more soupy so that... There's no standing water at the top, mm-hmm. but it's all smooth and uniform. It doesn't stand in lumps. It needs to be soft enough and liquid enough that it's smooth when it just sits there.
It conforms to the container that it's in.
Yeah, smoothly at the surface. And then you just shove in either coffee filters or I like to use the unbleached ones. You fold mm-hmm. them up into a wedge, like grab five of them, fold them into a wedge and shove them in there. But you know what works better?
Tell me.
Excelsior.
Which is?
It's shredded aspen wood.
Oh.
I don't know if it's all aspen wood.
Why do they call it Excelsior?
I don't know. No idea. But it works well. The reason why I like it better than the coffee filters is that coffee filters can get really wet and soggy mm-hmm. and sort of flop over. And the Excelsior works as a kind of a filter because you can hold the thing upside down and tap on it and you don't get little bits of media falling out.
You just it's like a salt shaker, except for fruit flies.
Yeah, and they just fall out through the Excelsior. Once in a while, a piece of Excelsior will fall out. But other than that, it works really well to contain the medium in there. And it's a lot of surface area for the flies.
Aww.
So they like that in terms of a place to walk, a place to pupate, a place, things like that. So that's mm-hmm. good for them. And...
How often do you have to reculture it?
Reculture it?
Because you never have just one going at a time.
I almost always have two or even three going at a time, and this is how it works. You get your initial culture. Well, we should talk about different types of flies, first of all.
Okay.
The kind I like to use are just Drosophila melanogaster. You can also get Drosophila heidii, just a different
What's
species.
What's the difference?
The melanogaster are smaller. They don't have wings to speak of. When you look at them, you don't see anything that's a wing.
So they can't, relearn how to fly.
Right. But they couldn't anyway, but...
Well...
And I'm talking about the kind that I like to get. Mm-hmm. There are other kinds of melanogaster. There are other strains of melanogaster, some that have wings. There's one called Turkish gliders, where they can just barely sort of hop and catch a little bit of air and then thump down to the ground and they can't really fly.
See, for me, that's too much.
Yeah, but
they got to not be able to fly at all, or it makes me too nervous to have them in the house.
But these can't do anything like that. They have nothing like a wing.
These ones don't fly at all.
The Heidi eye do have wings, but the wings are a little bit too long. And they're also, their muscles, physiology is messed up, so they can't use them.
They're like penguins.
Well, penguins use their wings to fly. These can't even do anything.
Well, they use their wings to swim.
Well, that's what I mean. They fly in the water with their wings. I didn't mean that penguins actually flew. Sorry, I misspoke. Because they can't fly in the air. That's true. But what I mean is the Heidi eye can't fly, but they do have wings. But they're just non-functional. And then there are some other various types and different color varieties and stuff like that. But I just usually go with the ones, the melanogasters without any wings.
They have color varieties of fruit flies?
They do. They have some that are golden. They have some with orange eyes. They have different kinds.
Does it make a difference to the fish? Like in their coloring, or they look tastier?
I think the idea is that the different colors can be more attractive to different predators. And like with frogs and stuff, I don't know if fish care. They just see a bug on the surface,
right,
suck it up. So anyway, you've got the different types of fly choices. The other difference between the Heidi eye and the melanogaster is the melanogaster breed faster.
Okay, so if you have smaller. A lot to feed.
A Heidi eye is about twice the size of a melanogaster, maybe even more. Considerably larger and slower breeding, and the sex ratios are skewed when they hatch, so it's a little harder to get them to reproduce, you know, quite as prolifically, because you have the males hatch and then the females are, I can't remember if it's the females that hatch first and then the males hatch a couple of weeks later or vice
versa.
So they're
not the right ages,
but you have to kind of mix flies of different ages for maximum reproduction.
Interesting.
It doesn't matter with the melanogasters. They just reproduce like crazy.
It's just easier.
Yeah, so I go with that. Another thing, too, is that mites will tend to attack fruit fly cultures. So if you have Heidi eyes, because they take longer, the mites tend to attack their cultures more readily.
Because there aren't as many flies out competing the mites?
Well, that might be part of it, and it could be also that the culture needs to last longer for the Heidi eye to be able to reproduce successfully.
And you can't subculture it as often?
As quickly. And the melanogasters, you can kind of throw them out before it gets to be a problem. So
they just don't get to the point where they would be developing mites?
Right. If you throw them out every month, which is about what I do, then you don't they haven't had really time to get the mites. But with the Heidi eye, you have to keep the cultures around longer. So there's that. But anyway, to start a culture, you need to go get a culture, which you can get online, or you can get them from, a lot of stores will carry them nowadays. Even, it used to be you could only get Heidi eyes in the stores, in the big box stores at least. And that's all I ever saw. Nowadays, you can find melanogasters also in the big box stores. But once you've got them started, you usually put about 50 flies in your new culture.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't put a whole lot more or a whole lot less, because if you don't have enough, then mold and things can outcompete the flies, which you don't want. And if you have a whole lot more, then you'll get this huge boom of flies, gigantic one, and then kind of crash.
They die too fast?
Can happen like that. So you get about 50 flies, put them in, and wait, assuming room temperatures of around 75 degrees Fahrenheit, somewhere around there. You wait about a week and a half, and you'll start seeing pupae all over the sides. And a day or two after that, and they're little dark things, the whole culture becomes darker from all these pupae everywhere on the sides of the plastic and on the excelsior and whatnot. And then a day or two later, you'll have a boom of fruit flies coming out. And then
you can start feeding.
Then you can start feeding from it, and you can also start another culture. And I always write with a permanent marker of the day I start a culture so that I know when it's a month old and I need to start thinking about getting rid of it. You should also start subculturing very soon after the flies start booming like that. You want newly emerged flies to start your next culture. So that's why I usually have three cultures around, because you have one that's almost a month old and it's starting to decrease. And then maybe a week to 10 days apart. And then you have the one that's producing a lot of flies, and then you have the new one that hasn't really started producing yet. And you keep those going. One thing, too, is that unless you're using them, feeding hundreds of flies out per day, you're going to need to do something with those extra flies. You can't let them sit in the container, or they will cause the culture to crash. It will just get, population will get too high and it'll kind of poison itself. So I empty out lots of flies every day or nearly every day. If I don't...
He just dumps them outside.
The culture will die. That's what I typically do with my extra flies because I don't need to use them all.
In the summer, critters will eat them, and in the winter, they will die because
it's... which is kind of sad.
Cold outside.
But right now, I don't have a lot of little fish that will eat them, or big fish, or whatever. I don't have a lot of fish that will eat them. I have, in the house, fish, like goldfish that are too big to eat them. I have little catfish at the bottom right now that won't eat them.
And we mostly feed them to the geckos right now.
Mostly feed them to the geckos right now. The fish that are at work would love to eat them, and I need to remember, and I always remember, don't remember to bring them in and give them to them. But they would love it. The bettas there would get a kick out of it. But anyway, you should plan on probably removing approximately 100 flies a day throughout the life of the culture. Sometimes more, sometimes less. But
that's a lot.
Something like that. Maybe 200. Because it produces tons of flies. And in terms of recommendations of companies for media, I mentioned Josh's Frogs. They have great media that I have used and great containers. Repashi makes a great medium too.
How do you spell that?
R-E-P-A-S-H-Y. Great stuff. It's awesome. I love it. I don't actually personally eat it, but...
I'm so glad.
The flies do, and it actually kind of smells good, except for the mold inhibitor. But I like that it has a mold inhibitor in it. I've never had any problems with mold or mites, as far as that goes, my fruit flies. I do throw them out pretty,
ruthlessly
once they get about a month old. So that one needs to go right there.
Oh, yes, that is a month old today, isn't it?
Yeah, so it needs to go. Anyway, I hope that gives you a little information on fruit flies, how to culture them, and so on. It's just kind of fun to throw some things out there. So thanks, Dr. Bob, for the suggestion. We'll try to hit some of the topics that you specifically mentioned, too. And I think that's all for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
So, ladies and gentlemen,
may the fish...
We just totally did, huh? It's your turn.
That's Jinx. You have to buy me ice cream
now. Okay, I will. You go first.
Okay, may the fish
be with you.